We adapt, we normalize, and we become indifferent. He understood that. He came out of a movement where people were beaten for asking to vote, killed, hanged, where bridges were crossed, knowing dogs, vicious dogs and baitons waited on the other side. We had that in South Africa. History does not move forward because of the cautious. I'm saying it moves because people refuse to be comfortable. And that's the lesson I'm drawing from Jesse Jackson. Hello everyone, welcome to the Readiness Report with the Daily Maverick. And of course, this episode, the series, is made possible by the generosity of the Friedrich Naumann Foundation. So today, I want to talk about Jesse Jackson, who was a friend of South Africa, a brother of South Africa. I had the honor of meeting him on three occasions. One of them was in a 702 studio where I worked for many years. He'd come for an interview on the 18th of November, 2010. And it was that whole euphoric moment after we hosted the World Cup. But ever the political animal, he put a political lens to what South Africa achieved in that year. So our topic today is we must not be comfortable with oppression. It is a tribute to Jesse Jackson, because one of the things he said that stayed with me, that moved me during the interview that we had, was that we must not adapt to oppression. I'm paraphrasing now. He said one of the things that is worse than slavery and oppression is to be adaptable, to adjust. He used the word adjust. He said we must not be adjustable to it. And we'll just play a snippet of that in just a moment. But just for context, at this very fragmented time where there is a lot of political noise, where the president of the US can just post a picture or an image of the former president of Barack Obama and his wife and depict them as apes, and many of his supporters say it's innocuous, it's nothing, where it is quite okay to spread Islamophobia as a lawmaker and just get away with it, where it is okay in South Africa to justify the strangling to death of an e-hailing driver because he's Nigerian, and his status in South Africa is irrelevant. Not seeing his humanity, regardless of his status, and I understand he was a student, so he was in South Africa legally. And those questions should not arise. We shouldn't be strangling anyone to death. And people are busy nitpicking, talking about how this young man was not supposed to be working as an e-hailing driver. Yes, okay, fine. We can talk about that because that's a separate topic. The topic here is, how do you justify the murder, the strangling of somebody based on their identity? And we don't need to talk about what's happening all around us, Sudan, DRC, Haiti, Gaza, Lebanon. All of that speaks to a world that is hungry for the kind of leadership Jesse Jackson offered to the world, a leadership that has empathy, that has sense, that sees your, that sees otherness, and it's not threatened by how different we are. So just going back, I then once sat across then from Jesse Jackson, a pastor, activist, presidential candidate, freedom fighter, but more than that, a man who understood what it means to stand when standing costs you something. I want to make that distinction because years from now, people will claim we didn't know, we weren't a part of it. We have to take a stand and speak up when taking a stand and speaking up costs you something. There are photographs of Jesse Jackson in Soweto long before it became fashionable for people to travel to South Africa and get a photo opportunity with Nelson Mandela. He was right there on home soil while Mandela was incarcerated. There are pictures of him with Walter Sisulu when he was released. There are pictures of him with children walking the streets, the dusty streets where I grew up in Soweto. And he walked our streets when the air, I'd like to say, was still thick with tear gas and hope. There is a stunning picture of him with one of South Africa's iconic sons, one of Soweto's outstanding sons, one of the most prominent doctors in Soweto, Dr. Motlana, Ntate Motlana, may his soul rest in peace. Ntate Motlana was also an anti-apartheid icon, Dr. to Mandela, the Sisulus, and so on. And may I say, my husband actually worked with him at his practice in Diepkloof in Orlando East. He used to do some locums for him, and he would stand in for him. So a special person, even at a personal level. So there's just this beautiful picture of Dr. Ntate Motlana welcoming Jesse Jackson to Soweto. I think it was the 80s. And then, of course, fast forward, he stood with our leaders, Nelson Mandela, Oliver Tambo, in London with Bishop Trevor Huddleston at a rally, at a concert, calling for the release of Nelson Mandela. At that time, of course, Oliver Tambo was exiled in London and Zambia. So this is what I gleaned from him during our interview. He understood that a struggle fought in one part of the world is not just episodic. It is not just a standalone matter. It is linked. The struggle in Alabama and the struggle in Alex in Soweto were not separate struggles. At the funeral of Winnie Mandela in 2018, he came to South Africa again, not a distant dignitary, but as a family of the struggle. He took a walk with President Cyril Ramaphosa. So when I interviewed him, I asked him about his thoughts on South Africa. He talked about the euphoria of the World Cup in 2010, but he also said that what we had achieved in South Africa, avoiding a civil war, I think we underestimate the enormity of the choice that South Africa made, South Africans from all walks of life, that rebuilding a country is going to be an arduous, painful task, but war is not an option. So much had been lost already. And this is what he said about South Africa.
Hosting the World Cup was a big deal. It was bigger than the soccer matches. It says that there's South Africa. You can take vacations there. You can build there. You can grow there. You can live there. And so it kind of sends an open door to the world. In contrast, we were really doing sanctions against South Africa.
That's true.
It's that. Now, to be sure, you're free but not equal, and the issue of struggling for equality is a big deal before us. And adequacy. We still must use the strength and the wealth that we have to afford for all citizens drinkable water. We still must make a real commitment to wipe out poverty and build affordable housing and employ youth with trade skills to do the building. So there is unfinished business, but boy, you've come a long way.
And then we talked about what lessons South Africa could draw from the American civil rights movement. And this is where I tear up because that comment that he made about oppression and where we ought to locate ourselves in relation to oppression when it occurs. And he had some very powerful, powerful words to say about the civil rights movement.
One thing worse than slavery is to adjust to it and rationalize it. You must be, when under oppression, you must always be maladjusted. And when people adjust to it and they stop dreaming, I had many classmates, for example, who were much smarter than I was academically, just had real gifts. But they gave up on dreaming about going to college. I mean, they would not dare dream about becoming senator or governor. Their dreams were capped in that way. So that was one. The other part, of course, is to watch people being denied based upon skin color as opposed to having opportunity because they're human beings. And I suppose the hardest part was to watch the martyrs, the people who lost their lives. I mean, you take for the Robbins Island group, you just take 30 years of people's lives away. And people like Med Gebers in America, Chris Harney here, to see young, brilliant young men and women who were martyred in the process. But the good news is, thanks be to God, we won those battles.
So again, what stands out for me about that is that we ought to be mindful of the pain of the past. And it is relevant for the US as it is for South Africa. We are watching the Madlanga Commission horror after horror revelation, the murder of whistleblowers, the struggle for water, the partisan, ugly personal jibes at each other by members of parliament, not focusing on the job itself. And I think what you've just listened to about reflections on the civil rights movement and the similarities with South Africa is that at a time when corruption, a lack of accountability, poor leadership is threatening our democracy, I think it would help to remember what it took to build that democracy. I think people have forgotten. I think the party that has been in leadership for the past 32 years, was it 32? Yeah. Has drawn some very colorful, and I mean that as negatively as possible, some people whose values are incongruous with what the movement stood for. As I look at these pictures of these icons with Jesse Jackson, Nelson Mandela, Oliver Tambo, Walter Sisulu, Frank Chigani is there in one of the pictures as well. You look at those images, Dr. Motlane, you just remember that South Africa was richly favored with morally upright leaders. I'm sure they were flawed because they were human beings, but I'm talking at a political level. They understood the gravity of the moment. They understood how important it was to show up, to build a country. And so today, when you look at some of those people fighting for tenders, using money to travel the length and breadth of, just not caring, just not caring. Children drowning on their way to school. It has happened because there's no road. Rivers are bursting. It's revolting that we have such a rich heritage, and there are people who swear their oath to the Constitution, and they are willing to reverse that. In the United States, it is Black History Month now in February. And what does Donald Trump do? He wants to remove all symbols of slavery. He wants to remove all signs of the struggle that this country has endured. He wants to remove all traces of your Martin Luther King. And in fact, Martin Luther King is also in one of the pictures with Jesse Jackson. Why would you want to claim that an epoch, a significant historical moment, didn't happen? Slavery, this country where I live and work, was built on the back of the enslavement of Black people, descendants of Africa. That is not even a fact to debate. We all accept that. Even the worst supremacists and racist among us do acknowledge that there was slavery. They're doing it for different reasons. They may justify it. They may claim that it made sense. They may claim that their race, their white skin, gave them a right to own Black people. They may claim that, while we claim the opposite. But at least they're not debating whether or not this happened. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're not debating the fact of slavery. Yet the president of this country in 2026, 2025, wants to remove monuments of pain, wants to remove symbols of Black history. And there's an ugliness to it. You know, he does it at the time when it is at the worst possible time. He says the racist things during Black History Month. He wants to posit or post Obama and Michelle Obama as apes right at the start of Black History Month. And so there's a nastiness to it. There's a lack of humility to it. And I'm just saying that the law in this country, in fact, there was a ruling just yesterday, I can't remember the details of it, where the Trump administration was prevented from interfering with some sort of symbolism of slavery. I'm sorry that I don't have that information, but it was a news item here that the government was blocked from doing something that was also akin to a reversal of this historic fact. I then want to invite you to think about the seduction of comfort, because as we become upwardly mobile, a black middle class emerges. And it's not just the burden of black people, it's your burden too. If you are white and you've been privileged and you live in a country that has enabled all your dreams, your education, and so on, there's a particular danger in democracies, especially young democracies. And that's not authoritarianism, I think. It is complacency. It is you, the boardroom executive, who sees corruption but says nothing because, you know, it's profitable not to say anything. It is the public servant who notices decay but chooses silence because promotion is near, right? It is the journalist who senses moral drift but prefers access, proximity to power over accountability. It is you, the citizen, who shrugs and says, well, at least it's not as bad as it was before. So that scares me, I must be honest, because I think that what Jesse said in that first clip that we played you, that oppression really returns wearing jackboots. It returns wearing indifference. We adapt, we normalize, and we become indifferent. He understood that. He came out of a movement where people were beaten for asking to vote, killed, hanged, where bridges were crossed, knowing dogs, vicious dogs and Batons waited on the other side. We had that in South Africa. History does not move forward because of the cautious. I'm saying it moves because people refuse to be comfortable. That's what I'm saying, and that's the lesson I'm drawing from Jesse Jackson.
My Africa protects my democratic rights. My Africa gives equality for all.
My Africa gives me the right to play.
The right not to be tortured.
The right to be born equal and free.
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 Let's talk human rights.
I also think that we have a duty, we have a moral obligation to play it forward, to be mindful of the history, but not undo the sacrifices of these great men. And it's about the bridge between movements. Jackson spoke about how the civil rights movement laid moral groundwork far beyond American borders. And that's what prompted my next question to him, because it was 2010. Barack Obama had been president for just under 2 years. Well, he won in 2008, November. And so it was 2 years after that. And there's an image of Jesse Jackson just weeping, weeping when Obama was inaugurated. And he was once asked why he was weeping. And I did ask him that, but you'll see just an edited clip of that.
President Barack did not come vertically down from the top. He came out of a 54-year process. He ran the last lap of a marathon. I mean, the 54 decision to make apartheid illegal in America, the right to vote in 1965. Along the way, those are earnest and poor people who did the marching, who faced the jail cells, were killed, and many of whom who yet live and still do not benefit from their sacrifice. The poorest Americans on the bridge that Sunday we marched for the right to vote, and the dogs bit and the horses kicked. None of them were a minister of the big church. None was a business person with money. None was a Hollywood actor or actress. None of the high-profile people faced those hits to make it possible. I thought about those persons. Then I must tell you, I wish for just for a moment if Dr. King could have been there. And just for a moment, if Medgar Evers could have seen what they got killed about. And so I thought about the joy and the journey. I was overwhelmed with a sense of joy. I'm glad that he won. I look forward to his re-election.
That moment for him was not just about Obama. Do you remember what I said about how history, how we connect? It's not episodic. he understood the weight of the moment because he remembered the sacrifices. And I'm paraphrasing again, because what he meant was that Obama can't just take the glory of the movement. It was made possible by all those men and women who marched, who were beaten, who were arrested, who boycotted this and that. He was trying to say it's not the powerful that enable historic victory. It is the sacrifices of ordinary citizens. Isn't it the same in South Africa? When struggle credentials, that crude terms, when people are questioning others' sacrifices and contribution to apartheid, it wasn't just Mandela in prison, and he understood that. It wasn't just the Mbekis in prison and exile. It wasn't just the Oliver Tambos. You know, it wasn't just the Moses Kotanis, the Chris Hanis, the Albertina Sisulu, Adelaide Tambo. It wasn't just those people. It was our parents and our grandparents, their everyday decisions, the protests of young people, the consumer boycotts, the sports boycotts, making sections of our townships and villages ungovernable. It was the defiance of very young people, the everyday harassments and arrests that we endured and witnessed, some of us in the 80s and many of you way before that. And that's what Jesse Jackson was saying in this clip about the Obama moment. So for our own Mandela as well, we can say that he did not emerge in isolation, that there's a current that runs from Selma to Soweto, from Montgomery to Mamelodi, from Birmingham to Bishop. Forgive me, I studied literature, okay? So this is how we become self-indulgent and write some pseudo-poetry. I wrote this down. There's a current that runs from Selma to Soweto, from Montgomery to Mamelodi, from Birmingham to Bishop. Jackson believed that in that current, in a global freedom movement, we speak across borders. We summon leadership globally, because right now it is at risk. And that risk is showing on Palestine. He publicly supported the Palestinian rights and called for justice and recognition, and he was criticized for it. But he believed that moral consistency matters. If you stand against apartheid South Africa, if you stand against segregation in Mississippi, then you cannot fall silent when another people speak of occupation, displacement, and dignity. We saw what happened in the West Bank, plans to annex the territory. It is wrong. It is wrong. And for Jesse Jackson, justice for him was indivisible. Okay? It requires communities, organizations, governments, corporations. It requires our courage. And so I'm just preaching to you today as a tribute to Jesse Jackson to say that we must care, that our democracy will continuously be tested, that the work is never complete, that it matters that we avoided a civil war, even though we lost so many people in the struggle against apartheid. Those sacrifices, we mustn't take them for granted. And we mustn't think that our democracy is foolproof. It is not. It decays when citizens get tired. We're going to the local government elections. Not voting is a sign of checking out. It's a sign of hollowing out institutions and empowering those who don't need any more empowerment. So don't be comfortable. Don't adjust to oppression. Don't adjust to an erosion of democracy. Don't adjust to inequality. Don't adjust to illegal occupation of other people's land. Don't normalize cruelty. Don't normalize state capture. Don't be cynical about it. Don't admire people who steal from the state and give them a coolness that they don't deserve. And so, again, I paraphrase Nelson Mandela as I conclude, that leadership is not the absence of fear. It is the refusal to let fear determine your moral position. He didn't say it like that, but it's the reflection around what we are being called upon to do at this moment. Rest in peace, Jesse Jackson. Thank you for being a friend of South Africa, a friend of the world, a friend of democracy. We are grateful for your life and your life's work. That's the Readiness Report, guys. Thanks for listening.